Just confirming that we are live on LinkedIn. Yes, we are. Welcome everyone to today's LinkedIn live session on the art of valuation for early stage biotech startups. Let me mute this because, okay, fine. My name is Adrienne Lusa, Dr. Adrienne Lusa, and I'll be your host for this session. In which I'm very thrilled to be joined by two experts in the world of finance, and we will be finding out more about them in a minute. But just to welcome everyone joining us and to say we look forward to an engaged session where we'll be diving into everything or most things. I'm sure an hour wouldn't cover it if we had to go around everything. But we'll be talking really about critical aspects that have to do with valuing biotech startups, which is an essential step in attracting investors and securing funding. So as you know, this series has been going on for a few months now. We try to keep it monthly, and we are talking everything about investment and funding specifically geared to biotech, the biotech sector and biotech entrepreneurs or interested stakeholders. So our esteemed speakers for today's session are Olufemi Elegbe, I hope I'm saying your name well, and Sheol Steve Tawia, both of whom bring a wealth of knowledge and experience in the biotech investment landscape. And I would just want to invite all of you to please think through your experiences and bring your questions to the forefront for our guest speakers today. Welcome Femi, welcome Sheol.
Good morning, good afternoon, nice to meet you all.
Yes, thank you so much for joining. And of course, Femi is joining us from New York City, where it is just turned 8 o'clock. So yes, good morning. And I believe Sheol is joining us out of Accra in Ghana. And I'm talking to you from Johannesburg, South Africa. To get us started effectively and as a way of introducing yourselves, gentlemen, could you briefly tell us about yourselves and share a unique aspect of your background that has shaped your interest in the field of investment and valuations, and specifically as relates to biotech? And I'll start with you, Sheol.
Okay, thank you very much, Adrienne, for the opportunity to be here and talk about one of the passion of mine, I would say. And so I've been kind of an investment guru for as long as I remember, and a fiddler into many, many things that I like. And I would say that the more complex it is, the more interesting it is for me on the financial side of things. And, you know, I was started off as a equity derivatives trader and structurer many, many years ago. And went on to do consulting for about 6 years as well, mostly for trading desk, actually. So I, at some point, I was one of those people who were valuing first to default CDO square credit derivatives before the subprime crisis. I was kind of part of it, let's put it this way. And then I went on to change careers totally into private equity and venture capital for another 6 years, where actually we used to run, you know, what we call Monte Carlo simulation that I knew from my trading days to apply to the investment in, you know, venture capital and private equity space. So that was kind of quite interesting to use those transferable financial engineering skills to another sector. And then fast forward another 10 years where I've had the opportunity to do use one of the crazy courses I did in Maastricht University as an exchange student, which is econometrics. So those who know econometrics, I can tell you it's hard. And I failed actually that course, but it taught me a lot of things down the road that I use today to do evaluations of companies, notably in biotech. But I would even say tech bio more for me. And can elaborate on the difference. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Shehu, and for giving us that very interesting background. We hope to hear more about your experiences as we will be chatting over the next hour. Over to you, Femi.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me. Nice to meet you all. I've kind of just taken it slightly back. I feel like I've spent pretty much most of my adult life in the investing, but for me, I've spent pretty much the last 20 plus years really working for big Wall Street firm. And at some point, I was really heavily involved in just doing research for those banks and companies to really understand how they invest in their money. And part of that really just after doing due diligence around some of the companies that they are lending money to. And that involves, are we going to get our money back? And part of that has to do pretty much across regular people. And then we have biotech, we have commercial business, we have just regular investors that also want to borrow money from a bank so they can use it to invest in different. So being able to kind of just walk across the spectrum to really understand why people are investing and what they're investing in and thinking through what is the rate of return and why are people doing that, it was kind of very exciting to me. And at some point, it just dawned on me that I'm actually good at really, quote unquote, forecasting some of the things going on by talking to more experts and then doing my due diligence. And I just felt like, oh, that would be a great thing to really actually spend more time to really invest my own money in some of my families and friends that really kind of just believe in me. And I really enjoyed just being able to kind of just listen to entrepreneurs and investors and really understand how they think through investing their money and how to bring new technology to the forefront. And in the last few years, I've just been very fascinated about the opportunity in the healthcare, pharmaceutical, and biotech space. And I felt like for those who haven't seen the number, biotech and information technology is probably one of the most high investment that could have in the last 5-10 years. And I just feel like maybe it's time to actually start paying more attention to this space. And I just enjoy everything that has to do with valuation and really just helping investors and entrepreneurs really think through about the decisions they're making. Maybe at some point, I will deep dive into some of the other things I've done. But I've spent most of my life working for, not like sale, but I was working for one of the guys in the years that we used to call Freddie Mac. We were one of the people that caused the financial crisis. Probably 40% of it. And then I've moved on to work for Capital One, which is a big credit card lenders in general in the US. And then I went on to Citigroup, which is like one of the top four bank in the whole world in the US. And I've enjoyed every part of it. And now really being an investor and being an equity researcher is something that I really enjoyed and allows me to add more value to people that are on both sides, both investors and entrepreneurs. That's pretty much a short story about me.
Thank you so much, Femi. So very interesting background that both of you have, both in the finance world and how the intersection has brought you to the world of biotech. And I'm quite grateful that Femi mentioned, you know, where biotech sits in terms of potential. And we will also be looking at that. And I think it's for that reason that we're having this series, because we do appreciate that biotech has a lot of potential. It's one of the fastest growing emerging technologies, and most of the world is really on it. And we do not want Africans or biotech in Africa to be left behind. So we're bringing in experts like yourselves to, you know, school us and give us the skills that we need to excel. I'm sure we excel at the science, but it will be great if we also, you know, excel at the other things that will make the industry thrive, not just, you know, grow or be at the early stage, where we want to see a thriving biotech industry in Africa. And I've just put in the chat, sorry, I'm still working on getting a more interactive poll going on. But in the chat, we want to just know who is, you know, tuning in. If you are, you know, first of all, introduce yourselves, please. Feel free to tell us who you are, where you're tuning in from. And also, we would like to know if you are already an entrepreneur, a biotech entrepreneur. Tell us where what stage you are in. Just answer Y or N to the question in the chat. Have you passed clinical trials if you are in the health space, if you are doing biotech related to health, or any regulatory approvals? So are you in the early stage, pre regulatory approvals, validation, or are you already past that? So just type in the chat so that we know how to tailor our conversation to best suit the audience that has made the effort to join us live today. Right, and then we will dive right into the first part of our conversation. And I'll just want to know from Femi, as a chartered financial analyst with, you know, rich experience in the world of finance and expertise, why should a biotech entrepreneur bother about financial literacy and understanding, you know, this whole issue about valuation? Why not just hire someone like you to do all the shits and just, you know, go about our science while people like you worry about the finance? Why is it important to actually understand the intricacies of the finances for our company?
That's a very, very tough question. Kind of really slightly thinking through it, there are so many reasons. And the biggest reason in my mind is basically no one can tell your story like you. And it's just very, I understand there's a place for professionals like us, but also you as an entrepreneur, you as the founder, you really know more about the problem that you're trying to solve. And being able to really ask someone for funding, it makes sense to be able to speak their language, because you're going before someone and you asking them to commit or devote it, hopefully a chunk of their wealth into your hand to really achieve this goal. So it really makes sense for you to fully take a step back and say, me as an entrepreneur, what do I need to know? And we live in a world that is really kind of run by numbers. Everything is a metric. So being able to kind of just speak in the same language, and for an entrepreneur, we are trying to solve a problem, but you really need to understand the number behind it. So the first thing in my brain is you need to understand financial statements. And as an individual, as just a regular person, hopefully we make money and we spend money, and hopefully there's something left over. We should be able to translate that into a business idea, into a business concept, whatever we're trying to do. Whether are we coming up with a vaccine, whether are we coming up with a technology, whether are we just coming up with an IP. Being able to say, this is what the revenue looks like, the expense looks like, this is what my R&D looks like, this is what I'm going to make in salary, this is what is going to happen in terms of what I'm going to invest in, terms of assets, R&D, technology. Being able to have that conversation is necessary. And also kind of just thinking through, you think about it, your income statement, how you make money, the assets you have, and how you spend your cash flow. The other that also makes sense is being able to say, okay, this is how I'm going to budget the money. That's kind of like saying budgeting and forecasting. At some point, we get into valuation. But being able to say, yes, right now I have $10. Just full disclosure, as you said, I'm in the US. So when I've used the word dollars, you can just mentally translate that into South African rand, just using the currency. So being able to say, this is how much I have right now, and this is how I'm going to budget it over the next few years. If I take your money, these are the plans of how I'm going to spend it. And being able to kind of just come up with your own forecast of how things are going to shape up, it really makes sense. You really should not just walk in to the front of an investor and say, hey, I need $10 million for this project. And they ask you, what do you want to do with it? How are you going to spend it? And having trouble. And one of the issues I've seen in the last few years when I actually listen to entrepreneurs is when you start asking them questions about what they're trying to do, it's either they never thought about the question or they really don't know how to respond. And I'll see just a bad example. Asking someone, saying, what is your operating margin going to be like at the end of your first year? And he's thinking, what is operating margin? So just understanding basic financial metrics is good enough. And in some cases, if it is getting too technical, you can say, hey, I don't have the answer. I'll get back to you. But just understanding the basics of forecasting, budgeting, and then we're going to get into the valuation and being able to kind of just sell yourself. That's what I want to call investor relations, because it is really not the same thing when you hire someone to just tell your story. You know the potential. You know the opportunities. So you can really speak both qualitatively and quantitatively. You don't have to be an expert at numbers, but understanding the story, understanding the ideas that you're trying to bring to the market, but the numbers behind it. This is what the operating margin is going to be in the first few years. We're probably going to lose money, but in the third year, things are going to improve. We're going to start generating 90% operating margin. We're going to be able to return money back to our shareholders. Whatever metric the investors or the investing community are comfortable, that's what we can. And also, we always talk about finance. Everybody think about finance as numbers. But another part of finance, which I think Seo is also an expert, is risk management. Being able to understand, yes, this is the number I'm giving you, but these are the ups and downs. These are the scenarios around it. It's always very good to tell people the nice numbers that they want to have, but being able to say, yes, this is a base case, but these are the risks that are likely to come up, and these are the ways I'm going to deal with it. And kind of just communicating in a language that people can understand or people are used to. That will be some of the reasons why I think it's very, very important for people to have financial literacy. Just being able to speak the language. You don't have to be a technical expert, but you want to be able to speak intelligently and hopefully be able to answer some questions. And I'll probably take a pause and see if there's anything say we want to add to what I've just said.
No, I think you've covered the key points, like qualitative analysis, quantitative analysis, and truly knowing the numbers. Like if we ask you what's your unique economics, you should be able to say it, right? What's your recurring revenue? What's your burn rate? All this jargon that most investors will ask you for, you need to know about it. You need to understand them. And the worst thing usually that happens is that when you're asked a question, you pretend you know, but clearly we can see you don't. You're trying to BS people. That's a no-go area. Just be honest about it. If you are early in the process, these are the first conversations we're having with an investor. Don't try and BS your way through it. It will not work. And that actually makes you less credible to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, I don't know what that term means. Can you explain it to me? And if the investor is annoyed, so he says, look, don't worry, I'll go and look it up. Next time, I'll be much more ready. Simple. But be very and honest and transparent about it. Don't try and BS people. It doesn't work.
And the last thing on that topic, which pretty much confirms everything you said. I remember a couple of years ago, I was listening to an investor and they were asking him and saying, how much money do you have in a bank and what is your burn rate?
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand that. And the investor and the group were like, okay, this is what that actually means. And it was like, and then he started doing the math. And then finally he was able to answer the question and they were like, hold on. What you just said doesn't align with what you said like 5-10 minutes earlier. Based on what you just calculated, you only have enough money to survive for 3 months, but you're telling us that you will be okay for 12 to 24 months. And that goes back to credibility. When you don't know, it is good to know. But one of the phrases I really love is proper preparation will lead to good results. And when you have poor preparation, that was a little bad result. But being able to just prepare as much as you can, understand just the basic enough to be able to do damage, that is where you want to be. And if possible, find experts, but do the basic legwork that you can do.
Great. And that's why we're having both of you here today, so we can grab the basic that we need to run off at least and have those initial crucial conversations. And I think just building up on what you both have said, and I think Shewu also gave some of the terms. Can we just have some jargon space to
Buster.
Just
yeah
to just hear all the jargon that we need to familiarize ourselves with, and if possible, if you can tell us what they mean, like the crucial ones, And also, when we talk about valuation, you know, coming to the heart of the matter of today's talk, what are the valuation techniques and valuation terms that we should be mindful of?
I think let's make it very simple, because I don't think we need to make it very complex this space. Most people look at revenue or income. That's number one. Number two, you need to look at, so we say so revenue is the top line, the highest level, which is basically the money that comes in, right? And then probably you need to look at what we call EBITDA, or earnings before interest, depreciation, and amortization. For biotech companies, it's a bit complex to calculate because there are a lot of things that you can amortize, which is basically just like your car. You have a car, it's an asset, but it depreciates every year. And when you want to resell it, there's a resale value that is as a function of how many years you've had it and how many years then it's amortized. And then there are different ways to amortize, but let's keep it simple, declining. Once a percentage per year, let's say 5 years, 20%. So the same thing for biotech, investment capital expenditures. So you have the top line revenue, you have earnings before interest, depreciation, amortization, EBITDA. And then for healthcare companies or biotech specifically, you can have adjusted EBITDA and other things like that. Okay. So these are kind of just looking at the financial statement, at least the income statement. And then we have total net profit, margin and net profit. So this kind of the high level. Mm-hmm. And the valuation, so let me say something about valuation versus pricing. There's a slight difference I want to make there. So valuation is both an art and a science, meaning it's a science because you run numbers, you put financial data, you look at financial statements, you run a financial model in Excel or whatever kind of sheet you want, Google Sheets, whatever model you use, and then they'll spit out a range or a number. And so because it's based on both data and art, meaning your modeling of the data, it's a science and an art, okay? And so I'm making the difference with price. For me, price is determined by a market, supply and demand. And so that's a critical element I want to make a difference. Sometimes people are talking about price while really they're thinking about valuation and the other way around when you're having a conversation with an investor. So I'll give you an example. When you go, you say you want to raise X amount of money at this valuation, and then the investor tells you, no, 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 for this kind of things, parameters that you have, this is this other valuation that I think is correct. For me, at that stage, you're in a negotiation about price, not valuation, not value. Do you understand? That's the way I look at it personally. So as soon as there's supply and demand haggling over a point, a data point, which is, in this case, valuation here, for me, you're talking pricing. I think people need to know what their value is, therefore their valuation, okay? And so, you know, we can go with Femi on the techniques. You have this usually the discounted cash flow method or the venture capital method or the comparable method. So different methods are there. They're more or less based on your statement or the market saying about what your company is. And that's kind of the difference I will look at. I don't know how deep you want us to go because we can go quite deep, all right? But essentially, you know, the discounted cash flow is really based on the future projections of where your revenue and the rest of the statement will be, but discounted to today, right? So let's say 10-year projection that you discount to today. So something that is worth $1 million in let's say 10 years, can be worth $100,000 now because of the compounding effect over the years. So there you discount the value. Now, in biotech, there's something called adjusted, where we add a probability ratio to your revenue for the discounted cash flow method, where we look at, as Femi mentioned earlier, base case, high case, low case, etc. But there's a discount that can be applied on the way this is calculated because of the risk. Okay. and it's preclinical or post-clinical trials, approvals, and things like that. So that can change. Typically, the venture capital method is slightly different, where if you know what a venture capital is really somebody who wants to put money in and get 100 times money in 5 years, let's say. So it already has a return objective in mind. So typically, the VC method, the venture capital method, says, if I invest $1 million now, the minimum I want to get is 5 times that money. So that's $5 million. So if I'm getting $5 million, 5 times my money, whatever value you give me, I'm going to divide that by that amount and figure out that's what should be my price today, which is essentially the venture capital method, right? So that's usually the two main ways this is calculated. I think there are a few other ways that can be done, but I think if we keep it simple for now, keep it simple, that should be covering the main things. And then we can go deeper as we go. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think you've touched on the main things, and I've just put in the chat as well. If anyone has, you know, specific terms or methods that they've always wondered or been baffled by, feel free to drop a note in the chat. We'll see if we can take it on during the session. Otherwise, also you can obviously, I believe, connect with either Femi or Seu after the session to get more insight. For the sake of time, I would want us to spend a few minutes to talk about. I know this conversation is more geared to early stage biotech startups, but if someone has already raised funds and they've already, you know, raised up until Series A, how can they further enhance their valuation? What are the strategies for them to enhance their valuation? And maybe even before getting to Series A, if you can talk us through the different funding milestones that are typical for biotech startups, Seu, that would be great. And then just tell us, like, after Series A, what can you do to enhance your valuation?
Sure. So what we realized is that, and valuation of a biotech company is what we call binary or in stepwise, meaning before, so let's say you start a company, you're generating some sort of revenue one way or the other by doing, I don't know, initial trials, or you have a new model that is working and people are willing to partner with your company, and then you run those trials or you develop a new drug. There is a time where not many people are certain that your drug is going to be a blockbuster, like a super thing, like insulin, Novo Nordisk, whatever it is, right? And so there's a lot of uncertainty. And so the way your value is going to be calculated is based on the technology and comparables or other companies in the similar space, how they were valued. It's very likely to be detached from the actual revenue you are generating, unfortunately, right? Because at that stage, you're not really generating revenue to the level of whatever innovation you have. And so it's going to be comparables and things like that. But then as soon as you hit, and I would say pre-seed seed, as soon as you hit seed where you've managed to get maybe a device in the market or in biotech, a drug, initial trials, and you maybe get a certain level of CE mark or FDA approvals or comparability to get some sort of approvals, then typically your value goes from, I would say, 0 to 1, which is the stepwise, right? And that is crazy because it can go suddenly from, let's say, $3 million valuation to $30 million, okay? Because suddenly your drug or your solution, your service, whatever it is, has a much bigger market size potential and application potential that is 10 times bigger at least, right? And so these are kind of the stepwise things. So let's say you've passed second clinical trials, right? The first phase, phase 2, where it's So let's say phase one was done on mice, unfortunately. Phase two is done on, you know, primates. That also increases your valuation. And then maybe phase three is done on humans, then it's even higher. So literally within 10 years, you can go from 3 to 30 to a billion just because you've passed critical milestones. So that's the stepwise you can see, okay? And so again, for us, for investors, it's very important that we put a probability ratios around those key milestones, because obviously we want to be in when we see that it's getting closer to approval and not out, right? And so there's a game where, you know, you need to dance with the investor to say, look, actually, we're getting closer, etc. So what investors will tend to do is they bring experts who have deep sector knowledge about those trials, and they would assign the probability of success of that particular drug or innovation in biotech to give them a pricing and some sort of reassurance, right? And that's how it functions, now, generally speaking, across the thing. So preclinical trial and post-clinical trial difference can be massive, essentially, in terms of valuation. Femi, do you want to add up?
No, I think you hit all the nail on the head. And I was going to say, depending on where you sit, either as an investor or as an entrepreneur, determines how you actually communicate that. And the reason why I mentioned that is, if you are an investor, you might really know that the probability is like maybe 40%, but you will want to model in a 20% and say, hey, if things go worse, yes, the price, the value will be lower from an investor point. But on the other side, as an entrepreneur, as a founder, you really don't want to be too low. I have this joke I always have in my head. That's what I was going to say earlier. I see valuation and pricing as date or going on a date. I was like, you want to share as much positive information as possible, but you don't want to add all the deal breakers.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that when you're thinking about it, if the investor is thinking 20% probability, you can say, hey, we've actually done ABC work and we think the probability is actually 70 or 80%. So being able to kind of just, the higher the probability, the better the value for you as an entrepreneur. But you also want to understand that it is a dancing game. You want to strike a balance between being too optimistic and being too pessimistic, because it has impact on the value that has been assigned to you. That would be one. And I totally believe in honesty. I want you to be as honest in your numbers as much as possible. But you always want to have it at the back of your mind that as an entrepreneur, you want to have the best value for your company, and you don't want to be diluted at the beginning and something that is your baby ends up becoming to somebody else. You might still be part of it, but making sure that you really fully understand how things are being modeled, which is the word that we want to use, will be something that I want to pay attention to.
So you need to, yes, Sil?
Yeah, maybe one additional aspect onto the valuation question, which is also something where, and that can be also a way to do conservative assessment. You look at the research and development spend. So let's say you've been spending, let's say over the last 3 years, you spend, let's say, 3 or 4 million in R&D to get where you are. So, and then an investor comes in and says, look, I don't think you're worth 4 million. I think you're worth 2 million. So you can have a counter-argument with the investor. So look, no, actually, I've already spent 4 million. So my valuation is minimum 4 million. This is the cost of R&D, right, already. And so that also helps you to kind of look at the different valuation method and then floor, meaning having the minimum, the floor of a valuation based on actual cash spend, and then the upside, right? And so that's also something that is interesting, because sometimes you can value a startup based on the R&D cost. And that R&D cost could be, if the startup was going to shut down now, that R&D cost has some sort of value, an IP, that somebody else can buy for that R&D, you know, that was done, right? And so that gives another angle to the valuation question as well. And it's less based on modeling, but it's more on actually cash spent. Not everybody has access to 4 million of R&D costs, but that's the story. Mm-hmm.
Can I actually just had maybe a couple of last points on valuation, and then I'm going to put a full stop to that. And I know Shiva already mentioned discounted cash or DCF and the venture capital. Two other things I really want to kind of briefly talk on and then get to my bigger point is there's also a place of kind of just looking for comparable company analysis. Mm-hmm. So look at yourself and say, and I'm hoping whatever you're doing is something brand new. I'm hoping it is unique. That's why you're doing it in the first place. But there's someone somewhere probably doing something comparable. Kind of just do that analysis and saying, there's someone else that is doing something similar and we kind of have the same. And then that can give you a sense of how much you could be worth. So if that person or that firm or that company is worth 10 million, then maybe you're also close to 10 million. It wouldn't make any sense pitching to an investor and you tell them that, hey, I'm worth 75 million. And they're like, hold on one second, you said you do A, B, C, and D. But there's this guy right beside you that is doing exactly the same thing. And the last time they talked to us, they're asking for 10, 12 million. So kind of just looking for comparison, but that would be one thing. The other thing I want to mention is pretty much if there's a precedent transaction, it is possible that someone, they just got sold or they just got bought or they just had a deal with some VC or PE firm. If there's a transaction that is exactly already done, you can also use that. So to summarize all that, back to what we started on, it is an art, also a science, but my view has always been the goal should be to triangulate. That's my fancy word. I love, and that goes back to scenarios, basically saying, what is DCF telling me? DCF is telling me I'm worth 3 to 5 million. What is venture capital hopefully is telling me? It's telling me 4 to 10 million. What are the other methods telling me? They're telling me 2 to 5. That will give you a mosaic or a paint picture of what quote unquote the range is. And then the question is, reasonably or with probability, what makes sense? If you are saying 5, 4, 5, 4, 3, 5, 4, 3, that should tell you that something between 3 and 5 is probably the right number. It wouldn't make sense you going before an investor and asking for 12. At that point, you start looking like, I don't want to use the word idiot, like you look less credible. You look less credible. Yeah. Like, if you look at all these different benchmark and multiplier, you are within this range, but you are like, we're an outlier. Now, if you are getting close to the extreme, you need to be able to explain to us why. What is so unique about you that the world or the universe has never seen? I'm not saying that's not possible, but you want to make sure it is reasonable. That's all. So being able to kind of just triangulate, that's my big word. Look at all the methods, scorecard, DCF, venture capital, comparable transaction, whatever it is. You don't have to do all of it. Do as much to, this is more like a homework. Do the best you could because this is your baby and you want to get the best value out of it. So I think it makes sense doing all the extra work at the beginning because you don't want to basically sell yourself short and then 2-3 years later be like, I wish I asked for this more. I wish I did that. That kind of regret really mentally and emotionally affects a lot of entrepreneurs. And I'm sorry to say it, as an investor, as a VC or PE, the goal is for them to make money. They love you. They love your ideas. They love your IP. They love your R&D. They love the product to bring into the market, but they are largely there to make money. So you want to make sure that you as an entrepreneur, you're getting the best out of it.
Thank you so much. I believe what I'm getting out of what both of you have said, and I also saw an interesting comment from Dan, is that it's not a thumb-sucking exercise. There's actual models and framework to use and to, you know, research to be done. And you want to do the groundwork and really get these numbers more or less within the right benchmark. However, there are some factors that could, you know, play or come into the mix and change things radically, like Shewu was saying, between seed and you know where when you already get approvals and you're already having, you know, clinical trials with good results and you're looking more and more credible in terms of your your product making it to the bench or to the bedside if you're in health. I really appreciate all the insights that you've given us, and I hope that this is very valuable to our audience. And please, if you have really specific questions on, you know, the methods, the terms, the techniques, the art aspect of it as well, do put that in the chat, and I will do my best to get our speakers to answer.
I have two comments. I have two comments to add. One is that, actually three comments. One, the first one is, a lot of founders, including in biotech, tend to undersell themselves, notably on the time they spend. And I'll explain why. You know, founders, and I suffer from the same thing in my own space. You spend a lot of time developing the products, etc. And let's say you pay yourself a salary that is way below market because you're really pushing on the company. You really want to put as much money into the company as you can, and so for things to progress. So what then happens is that compared to the opportunity of capital of you being an employee at the same similar level in the corporate, what I think a lot of founders should actually do is capitalize that opportunity cost of capital. Because if you were paid a normal salary, quote unquote, for that industry, but then let's say, just for a number, $10,000 a month, but you're paying yourself $2,000, then that difference should be capitalized as sweat equity into the business. And that also goes into the valuation. Sometimes we get companies, entrepreneurs, saying, oh, you know, I've got my friends, they live in my house, so they don't pay rent. And, you know, I give them food, we are in the house, and stuff. But all of those are expenses you're incurring that you're not capitalizing as part of salaries, benefits, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to do it fully loaded, right, into the company's financials. So when I'm reviewing that, I always ask the question, so are you working full time on this? Yes, no. If you're not, then we need to make sure you are, and whatever cost you are incurring or opportunity cost of capital you're having should be included. Okay, so that goes into the valuation as well. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, unfortunately for me and for all of us actually, I've realized that more often than not, when it's a woman-founded company, a startup, including in biotech, it's even worse actually. Biotech, medtech, realize that obviously there's less women in the space, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But then, even when they are, they tend to undervalue what they need in terms of fundraising. For the same company, let's say for the similar company in the similar industry, in even the same country, let's say South Africa, Ghana, Nigeria, whatever it is, if it's a woman leading the company, most often than not, they ask for 30 to 40% less money than a man. So I've been coaching a number of women entrepreneurs, and including in biotech, it has happened. I think the only country where I coached women entrepreneurs in Africa where the valuation was actually quite robust was Egypt. For some reason, Egyptian women are much more aggressive. much more aggressive than the other ones. You'd be surprised. Yeah. Okay. And so, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a particularity of the ecosystem, because maybe there are a lot more women entrepreneurs in the startup ecosystem in Egypt than elsewhere. I don't know. But I found that, you know, those Egyptian women were on par. Okay. And the last one I want to make is, you know, especially in biotech, you know, I think it's important to get advice from people who are in the space, especially because I believe that biotech, if you're building a biotech startup on the continent in Africa, what you're doing is actually has a global applications. And a lot of us forget that, right? Actually, whatever sector you are building something in should have a global application. So if you're building a biotech in, I don't know, Burkina Faso, which is a bit tight these days, but yeah. Whatever you're building should be applicable at a African stage, but also globally, because it's biotech, mm-hmm. it's human, it's right, you know. So that mindset is a critical one, I think, even in your valuation. Because I can see some companies, let's say in Kenya, who are in the biotech space doing something great. And you take a similar company in LATAM or US or Europe, not that different. Mm. Maybe you have 100% difference in valuation just because of where they are located, right? And that also something you need to understand. Compare yourself not just to people around you, but globally, because biotech is a global business, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure people would be willing to pay for that price. But if you make your point that, oh, look, these are similar products or service, this is a similar process to somebody in Boston area, it shouldn't be pricing me differently because we're doing research and application mm-hmm. that are global in nature, right? And that's also, we need to debunk that mindset. And I'll stop there. I can go on and on about all these other things.
Thank you. And those were very pertinent points that you raise. I'm particularly impressed by the point about, you know, women founders and how they value themselves. And I hate to say this, but it doesn't start here. It's a more systemic issue. But thank you for bringing that to the forefront, that even women who have, you know, broken a lot of glass ceilings and have decided to go for it and become entrepreneurs in sectors as polarized as biotech, they still have that, you know, holding back when it comes to giving themselves value. What I want to really know is, from an investor's point of view, why is it important for a startup to be rightly valued from the word go? Why is that important? I know you've brought up a few issues from the entrepreneur's point of view as what they stand to benefit. But from an entrepreneur, from an investor's point of view, why would it matter that the biotech entrepreneur understands valuation and that they actually get it right? Does that help in attracting, especially within Africa? Would that help if we're getting our valuations correct? Would that help to attract, you know, credible investors?
So I'll take this. Or
I don't know who wants to take the question. Femi, do you want to take that?
Maybe I'll jump in and then she'll come in. So, and this is really bad, but I'm going to say it nicely. As an investor, I really want to be undervalued as much as possible. I really wanted to. Now, really answering your question, I also wanted to be motivated and happy and excited to be part of what you're working on. And this is a bad analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway. There's this guy, he has a car company in the US. I think it's called Tesla or something like that. Everyone has it that the guy was overpaid a lot of money, kind of playing that into valuation. And the reason why he was paid a lot of money was because they set aggressive goals before him and this guy killed it. Now we can debate whether I should get that money or not. And the point is, if a company is, back to what we said earlier, it is an art and a science, but largely art, if it is appropriately valued or priced, we want the entrepreneur, we want the founder to be excited. I mean, I used to say this joke. I said, my best form of job is a job that I'm in the shower and I'm thinking about how to solve a business problem. We want a founder that is basically always thinking about how to innovate, coming up with new IPs, coming up with new ideas of how to move the company forward. Let's just say a company, for some reason, because the founder, the entrepreneur didn't do a great job, was undervalued, and 3-6 months later, you realize the mistake you made.
Mm.
I'm sorry to say this. It's going to affect you emotionally and mentally going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, you know, I'm kidding, you could have been worth 10 million, you should have been 10 million richer, but now you only 3 million. And you start thinking about what you could have done, and then you start having all these ideas to either go do something else, instead of really doubling down to become better at what you're doing right now. So mm-hmm. as an investor, as a VC or PE, I want you to have all your skin in the game. I want you to be so devoted to this project that you are just thinking about how to make it successful, because there's something in it for you and it's really what you are excited about it. So that's really how I think about it. And also, at some point, we want to make sure it's well valued so that you're still here. Now, there are some situations whereby it is not well valued, and for some reason, the founders or the founding team, they have less equity at the end of the day, and they're like, you know what? You get pushed out. But I want you to be there to actually make it successful. We can debate some founders, they just want to do it for a little while and move on to do something else. But I'm hoping that for most of us, we want to be part of the success story and say, hey, this is my baby and I'm going to be with it till the end of time or till I retire. So that's kind of how I say, I want everybody to be happy. I want it to be a win-win. I understand there's some shark, I don't know what they call them in South Africa, some shark investors out there that basically they just want to suck all the life and all the blood out of your company. But I still think most investors really want it to be profitable. They want it to be successful. They want it to be happy. Cheryl, I'll give it back to you.
Oh, no, you just said it. I mean, I was going to sum it up by saying, buy low, sell high. Simple. Very simple, right? But as Femi mentioned, you want to buy low, but at a low valuation that is still motivates the founder to perform and grow the company together. And in fact, even us as an investor, we want to provide value, right? So we not just want to put money, we want to put money, our networks, our resources, expert advice, even, you know, like roll up our sleeves and help you in business development, operations, finance, etc. This is our job, right? And that's actually the bigger value creation that we can have to really support the companies. That's essentially it. Yeah.
Amazing. And a few more questions. I mean, this topic, I think, needs another episode probably to really delve into certain things. But I wanted to get a few pointers from both of you. What are the key components for a compelling valuation presentation? When in front of investors, what are the key compelling things that entrepreneurs should be mindful of when presenting, you know, to communicate with clarity and impact?
So, like any case study, when you're being asked a question, all the numbers you put on your deck or presentation, you need to be justifying it. So if somebody, you're coming up in with a $100 million valuation and you are asking, why is it 100? I don't agree with you. It is your job to explain it and justify it in a such a logical manner that the investor must agree. And be very transparent about the assumptions made on total addressable market, serviceable, obtainable market. That's top down, and then bottom up. Let's say there's 1.4 billion people on the continent. Median age in Africa is 19 years old. That means that if the median age is 19 years old, that means that there's at least 50% of the people, 600 million or 700 million now, people below the age of 19. I'm taking the average, not the median, but it's okay. And then out of that, maybe 20% is truly 18 or 19. Everybody else is not an adult. So if you do those 20% who are 18 and 19, what type of population is that? And basically, what product or service can you offer them? And then you do your bottom-up analysis, which is granular, at the level of your region, country, hospital, clinic, et cetera, et cetera. It depends, right? So once you can justify, break down all these numbers and explain it, it makes the conversation much clearer. And on the back end, send the data room with all those assumptions, transparency calculations, and then the investor will do his own assessment. obviously will discount by 23% because you've been very optimistic. But that's just the name of the game, right? That's the name of the game.
Femi, anything to add?
I have tons of things to add, but I think he said it very succinctly. But for me, kind of just thinking to it, the first thing kind of in my brain is you need to develop a compelling narrative or story around why you're doing what you do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just being able to tell a story of how you got here is really enough. Yes, there is a product, but being able, I'm just making things up, being able to tell a story of saying, hey, 10 years ago, there was this issue in my family, somebody died, and that opened my brain that there's a need for this technology or this vaccine, and I made it my life mission to figure out and support people to do it, and then I came up with this idea. Tell the story, make it compelling that people really want to listen to you and be part of it. And the other thing is really, you need to focus on value proposition. And what I meant by that is, what is so unique about you? Why should I care? Telling me that you're making a pen doesn't, let's just say this is a vaccine. Telling me you're making a vaccine for malaria, okay. There's penicillin that is already being made. What is so special? So being able to kind of just craft the story around what value you bring into the market and why someone should want to give their money to you is something I want to do. And back to what we said, yes, we're talking about numbers, valuation, but being able to make the complex simple. Yes, I know we're all PhDs and professionals and MDs, but being able to talk to different audiences that are even non-technical, yes, there's a place for throwing out jargons, but making sure that you can break it out and people understand. Yes, there's a finance side, but even the medical, the technical, the biotech jargons that we're used to, figuring out a nice way of saying it will be. And to some extent, back to what I just said, you have, hopefully, an expert in the space. So kind of doubling down on your expertise and credibility also helps, and making sure you have a team that is actually also credible, just making things up. Let's just say I only have a high school diploma, and I'm telling you, you should invest in this new vaccine. And then you're asking me questions, and all the people on my team, some of them are PhDs and MDs, but I'm not. You want to kind of like emphasize the credibility of the folks on your team and say, hey, we are the right people for the job, and we can get it done. And being able to kind of just, I see it as birthday or Christmas gift. Sometimes it is an item, but the way you package it really matters. I can just give you a what is that wristwatch? One of those fancy wristwatch, and I just give it to you, and then you take it. But imagine if I just give you a small candy, and I put it in a fancy elaborate box, and I put a paper wrap around it, and I present it to you. Just the packaging blows your mind away. Now, we have to get inside and see what is inside the box, but I'm already blown away. And the last thing is, there's always a need to kind of strike a balance between giving too much and too little information. But everything we do, let this be data-driven and let it be factual. Talk about the risk as well, and that kind of let people really know that you're credible and you've covered all the bases and everything that she was already said.
And I think both of you have covered it extremely well. With just 1 minute to go, I will not even bother summarizing. I think this recording will be available on the link, the event link. So if you missed this, just go back to the link. Well, if you're hearing this, then you probably got it. Or if you want to listen again to the details because of how deep this was, please go back to the link and you will find this. It will also be shared on the Africa Biotech Conversations podcast. Wherever you stream podcasts, you can find the podcast there. Thank you so much for making time to join us in this conversation. And I hope that it was valuable to you. Please send through any other questions that you'd like to get us answering on the Ask Me Anything series around investment and funding geared towards a successful biotech industry in Africa. On that note, thank you so much, Shehu. Thank you so much, Femi, for your expertise
and
generously sharing with us. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.